This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Charles Klotfelder has joined us. He has written a book called Big Time Sports and American Universities. He's a professor of public policy at Duke University. And he wrote this book in hopes of putting some facts out there about major college athletics. You know, Charles, over the years, I must have had at least a half dozen people who have either written books or taken a public position about colleges and big-time sports, the problems that exist, and maybe some of the solutions as well. But I always get the feeling when we talk about this subject that we're standing in quicksand when it comes to talking about colleges and big-time sports. Is that the case?
Well, it's my analogy is more of holding a tiger by the tail. And, from two perspectives. One, the athletic departments, they just don't know what's going on with all these escalating costs, especially the coaches' salaries. And they would, they look, I think, into the future with some kind of nervousness. But the other thing that is similar to that is that here we have a university that is kind of minding its own business, doing research, teaching, and service, but it's got this entertainment arm to it that has a dynamic all to its own. And the people that run the academic side at the university really don't understand what is going on the other side. And so it makes it very interesting.
Yeah, you bring up an excellent point. The correlation I've always made when I've talked about this subject or even talked to people who have written books about it is it's really a mismatch because you've got people that are educators that do not understand the entertainment field. They don't understand like professional football, professional basketball. And we're talking about big-time revenues here. I mean, it really is a mismatch, is it not, Charles?
Well, people like me got into the business because they like books and, they like to teach maybe, and they certainly weren't thinking they were getting into a Hollywood type of business. But part of what the university, at least the universities that have big-time sports, they do have an entertainment aspect. And one of the things I'm arguing in the book is that we really ought to wake up and smell the coffee and acknowledge that, and then go on and do the best we can with more fuller discussion.
I was with some friends this past weekend. Three of them were former NFL football players. One of them is a current NFL coach, and another is a former NFL coach. And we were talking about the college situation, and we were just saying how hypocritical it is to be talking about universities and higher education, but yet we're talking about athletes that are generating multi-millions, if not billions of dollars across the spectrum of college sports, and yet it is very hypocritical. Am I fair in saying that?
That word really hurts. No, I use that word in the book, and I think that universities could be accused of that, and certainly the NCAA could be, because they look with a straight face and say, we're just trying to protect these young men and women who are student athletes. But what they're doing is really protecting for themselves some major revenue streams. Now, for me to say that it's unfair for these athletes not to get anything, any part of that surplus is one thing, but that's quite a different thing than knowing what to do about it. Because I don't think there's any easy fix.
As well as I do, the term slavery has been used when it comes to the college athlete, that all this money is being made, but yet they're not getting paid anything for it. They really can't move around in the free enterprise system like we can. If you're a lawyer and it doesn't work out at one firm, you can go someplace else. You're not penalized. Mm-hmm. That word slavery, is that too harsh a word, or does it pretty much tap into what it actually is?
That is a very hard word, but here's the way I would think of it. Michael Lewis calls it serfdom, but it's the free market is working throughout college sports in almost every respect, except the players are constrained to get only tuition and fees, and there's a monopoly there making sure that they don't get an option to get any more than that. Economists have estimated that the value of an NFL quality football player to a football team is about $500,000 a year. So as many years as he plays. And in basketball, the value is over a million, and that is what the revenue that is brought in from having one of these draft quality players on your team. So who's getting that money? Well, it's going into the coffers of the universities, and it's going to coaches' salaries.
Charles Klotfelder is with us. We're talking about his book, Big Time Sports in American Universities. Let me get into it. One of the things that fascinated me was that your orientation in writing this book was cost versus benefits rather than cost against income. Explain a little bit further.
Well, economists, they sort of wake up in the morning thinking about costs and benefits. So it's a natural way to think about it. One of the things I wanted to try to do here, Ron, is to look at something we all take for granted. And pretend you're somebody from another country, and you come in and you look at a university with a commercial sports program. You know, let's say it's Alabama or it's Ohio State. There's no other country in the world that has commercial sports as part of their university mission. So I really had a twofold mission in looking at what I was doing in the book. One is, what's the sense of this? And second, are the costs or benefits greater? When I got into it, I thought it was going to be a situation in which the costs, which are pretty obvious in terms of dollars and also values and conflicts, I thought that they would overwhelm everything. But in fact, there are some benefits that people don't talk about very much in big-time college athletics. They're not benefits that really accrue to the bottom line, but they are social benefits, and one of them is that a lot of people are made happier, their lives are better because they follow the Crimson Tide or whoever it is. And the second is college sports, because these teams are racially integrated, they give a lesson for the rest of us in need of this lesson of how people that don't look like each other can not only get along, but maybe even cooperate for some common good.
One of the things that did surprise me, and it was apparently a surprise for you as well, we always hear about how much the NCAA and college sports is making with the NCAA tournament, the billions of dollars. There was, of course, the Pac-12 television contract, which is $3 billion over a 12-year period. And yet one of the surprises for you was that the biggest source of revenue for the most successful big-time college programs is not television. It's not even ticket sales. It's contributions. That surprised me.
Yes, and that surprised me too. And the logic of it is you've got a team that's so good that everybody and his brother wants to get in, okay? So it could be basketball or it could be Ohio State football. The demand for these tickets, especially the good tickets, is so great that the face value is not enough to deter anybody, especially given the affluence of some of these fans. And so in order to ration off those very rare good seats, you say, well, you know, I'll give you a chance to buy these tickets if you'll make a contribution to our program. Well, it turns out those contributions loom very large at the most successful programs like Texas, Ohio State, Duke, UNC.
You also point out about the salaries, and you know, that is always a big discussion point when it comes to big-time college sports. What is the biggest misconception about the salaries that the coaches are making?
What's the biggest misconception? I'm not sure that, you know, it's pretty well reported. The numbers that are reported, at least the numbers that I tried to use in my comparison, were only dollars that were guaranteed to the coach. They weren't contingent on winning the championship or anything like that. And they also had to come through the university. So to the extent that the coach made extra money by making speeches, that I didn't count that. As far as the misconception, I guess maybe the thing that I really didn't talk about that much is the amount of money on the payroll to assistant coaches. These numbers have gotten rather large. But really, I think the thing that hits you between the eyes is the extent to which the head coaches' salaries have increased over a 24-year period. While faculty members were increasing at 32%, presidents at 90%, the head football coaches were increasing 7.5 times.
And do you see that slowing down at any time in the future?
It's, you know, they're going to run out of money. There's, you know, this, I don't see how it continue. If the revenues were to keep increasing, then those salaries could keep going. But if there's no more money left in the pot, the athletic director is going to look at the coach in the eye and say, Norm, I'd like to give you more, but, you know, we're out.
They're going to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. Charles, hold on just a second. Very sure. Interesting topic. And also, I urge you to check out this book. It's called Big Time Sports at American University. And the fine professor and also author of this book, Charles Klotfelder, is with us. We'll talk more about it as we continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline.